Well, for years now, there have been reports of crashed UFOs. But what has become of the debris? How have they been retrieved? Up next, retired Army Sergeant Clifford Stone sheds some light on that on Coast to Coast AM. In the world of UFO research, the name of retired Army Sergeant Clifford Stone is nearly a legend. Decorated Vietnam combat veteran serving 22 years, Stone claims that he has led a double life from the late 60s through retirement in 1990. While officially assigned to an NBC team, and that is nuclear, biological, and chemical, hazard retrieval and abatement detail, he asserts that he also served on the top secret UFO crash retrieval missions, where he had physical contact with down ET craft, where he interacted directly with captured non-human life forms. The official team assignment allegedly served as a cover for those highly secretive and compartmented operations. Here he is on Coast to Coast AM, Clifford Stone. Hello there, sir. How are you?
Fine. Thank you kindly, sir.
It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, sir.
Quite an intriguing position you've had with the military, Clifford, over the years.
And it almost didn't happen because I almost didn't get in the military.
Once you did, how did they get you into this area?
Well, I figured that I was just going to be in the Army as a clerk. And what happened when I got to AIT, which is Advanced Individual Training, I started to be shown certain items like pictures, documents. I knew what secret, top secret, I knew what that meant, but I didn't understand till later on what the words following those words were. And I got a little concerned because at the time I knew I didn't have a clearance. And I asked the individual who was showing me all this stuff if he was sure I could see it. After all, I didn't have a clearance, and we could get in trouble. And he advised me he wasn't showing me anything that he wasn't directed to show me. After that, I went to my first unit of assignment, which was the 36th Civil Affairs Unit there at Fort Lee, Virginia. And while I was there, when I first reported in, I told my first sergeant, I says, well, it says I'm supposed to be a clerk typist, but I think you should know right off the bat, I can't type. And he looked at my records, took them into our company commander. Company commander came out and asked me if I was colorblind, and I wouldn't understand until later on what he meant by that.
Okay.
But they went ahead. I got there in January of 69, February of 79. They sent me to NBC school at Fort McCollum, Alabama, and that was a three-week course. My records reflect I was TDY for 14 months there, but I have medical records and other things showing I was sent back to Fort Lee.
Was all that, Clifford, supposed to be legitimate at the time when this was before they pushed you into the crash retrieval and to the UFO operations? Was there another reason they wanted you to do all this?
I honestly believe, yes, sir, there was. I was medically rejected from military service. When I went after, I tried to enlist first off, and that's when I found out I was medically rejected. At the time they had the draft, 6 months later, the draft board directed that I go to the Ashland, Kentucky, AFES, Armed Forces Entrance Examination Station, for reevaluation. When I went there, there was a doctor, he was a colonel, he was visiting from someplace else. The captain, who was the doctor there, who was going over our medical records, told me that not to worry, I was going to be going back home. Well, the colonel called me in, told the captain to go ahead and take the rest of the day off. I actually suggested he take his family to a park that was in Huntington, West Virginia, called Camden Park.
Well, that's unusual.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah.
But he called me in. And he said, you don't have to go to the military. And to be honest with you, I wanted to go because I believe, you know, my country, right or wrong. And at the time, I believed that we had a direct line to God. We couldn't do no wrong.
Yeah, I understand.
So I told him I wanted to get in. He says, well, anytime you want to get out, you just bring up this medical condition and you are out. And I said, you get me in, sir, I won't get out. So I got in. After getting to my first permanent duty station and going to NBC school, we went to Fort Belvoir, Virginia. And at Fort Belvoir, Virginia, which here again, I think that it was meant for us to get into that theater where they were having the briefing, because there was no guards, no doors locked. But they had about 30 people that went there, and they were the OICs of the NBC Quick Reaction Team throughout the region there.
And again, we're talking about nuclear, biological, and
biological, chemical warfare.
Okay.
Actually, when I first got in, they called it ABC, Atomic, Biological, Chemical Warfare.
At least they were sticking with the networks.
Huh? Oh, yes, sir. So me and there was this Air Force airman, we went inside because we had lunches with us. Everybody else went to the snack bar to eat. Anyhow, we went up to the balcony and we looked down. When we looked down, we saw these officers looking at films. Well, the films were of a typical flying saucer craft, cigar-shaped craft, hill-shaped craft, all kinds of things that wasn't only conventional aircraft. Then we started to see the bodies. Now, both he and I thought we had seen a whole lot of science fiction movies, but we couldn't identify what movies these pictures, slides, and film strips had come from.
Could you determine at that time, Clifford, whether you were looking at like military film as opposed to something from Hollywood?
At that time, no, sir.
Okay.
We actually thought we were looking at science fiction trailers.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, a guy yelled out back of us, getting up obscenities and everything, wanting to know what we were doing here. And we told him nothing. We're just eating lunch. And he told us, you don't know what kind of trouble you're in. Of course, they had armed uniform MPs there, and they rushed me and this airman down the stairs, took us outside, threw us into a van. And when they threw us into a van, they took us to another place that was out in the woods, a one-story frame structure building. And there, he was there for about 3 days. I was there for 5 days.
What were they doing to you guys?
They were interrogating us, asking us, what did we see? What did we see? And, you know, we couldn't understand why we were in trouble seeing them show the trailers of sci-fi movies.
Were you under, like, house arrest?
We were forbidden to go outside. We could go to the restroom. We had a room that had maybe a 15-watt bulb in it. But if we started to go to sleep, they'd immediately wake us up.
Sergeant, would they come in? You were there 5 days. He was there three. Would they come in periodically to try to break you down or anything?
Oh, yes, sir. There was a whole period of that time that it was just sleep deprivation.
Would they want you to forget?
Well, they wanted to break you down for whatever reason. On the third day, the airman went ahead and said, I didn't see anything. And there was a guy, we had two people was doing the interrogation. There was another guy that just sat over in the corner, never said anything. And the guy over in the corner, he made some notes on a little clipboard that he had. And he looked up and he nodded in the affirmative as yes. Then they took the airman out of the room, told him he had to sign some papers, and he'd be going back to his unit. So I thought, well, that worked for him. I said, well, I didn't see anything. So they looked over at me, and he still was signing some stuff on the clipboard. And he told me that, he nodded.
So
in the negative that I was going to stay there.
He wasn't so sure you really meant it.
Yes, sir. Then I'm trying to rush through that part because I don't want to get emotional here.
Well, that's right. You take your time, Clifford.
Anyhow, I went back, and it was on a Friday night. So after they finally said okay, and I had to sign a paper that I'd never discussed anything that I saw there, and I would never tell what happened during that 5 days. I went back to my unit. I went to bed. Next morning, the charge of quarters came and woke me up and said I was needed in the first sergeant's office. So I went down to the orderly room. That's where the first sergeant and the company commander right behind there had an office.
Yes.
And I was told by the charge of quarters to go inside the office back there where the company commander's office was. Once I got back in there, they asked me, okay, what happened to you? Why were you not here? Well, it's the same two guys that was interrogating us.
Oh, that's weird.
So I said, well, you know, I was performing my duties. And I got to the point where they would ask me, and I finally said, look, you guys were there. You know what happened. And one guy said, see, I told you, he can't keep his mouth shut.
Ah, they were testing
and
you.
They went ahead, one guy went ahead and pulled his weapon and says, we shoot him now. We get it over with. And the other guy, no, look.
Good cop, bad cop?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You go get some coffee, get some sandwiches, come back here. And what they wanted me to do at that time was that I needed to go ahead and re-enlist for 3 more years. And at the same time, be willing, if they needed me from time to time on something I already had an interest in, that I would be willing to do it. And I'm sitting back thinking, okay, what is it? Says, no, that's not part of the deal. Will you do it? Well, I'm thinking,
you're either in or out, they say.
That's
right?
It. And I was thinking, well, kind of, I have some time to think about it. Says, you re-enlist Monday morning, or we court-martial you. And I said, you're going to court-martial me for being AWOL? Oh, no. You wasted U.S. government taxpayer money. Your contract said you were supposed to go into the Air Force. How the devil did you ever wind up in the Army? So for the last 6 months, you've been in the Army, and you were supposed to be in the Air Force.
Is that true?
I still have my D Form 214 to prove that.
Okay.
Anyhow, they went ahead and said if I'd go ahead and re-enlist, they would go ahead and make a pen and ink correction, and I'd just sign a little statement that in reality, I had enlisted in the U.S. Army, not the U.S. Air Force. And
they had plans for you, Clifford.
Oh, yes, sir. I think they already knew.
Yeah.
And after that, we started to have strange things happening. And the first incident was at Indian Town Gap. And we actually had what's called an FTX, which is a field training exercise. And while we were out on the field training exercise, we got word that a plane went down, and it may have nuclear weapons on it. So they said they already had A team there. Now they want Bravo team to go, because you always sent two teams. Mm.
And you were the B team?
We were the Bravo team.
Okay.
So when we got there, they already had the floodlights and everything set up. So I went ahead and ran field wire from my 312s, which are field telephones, so I connected them to my switchboard that was in the back of my deuce and a half.
Right.
Then I got back there to man the deuce and a half. Then this one guy that would haunt me throughout the rest of my life, he came up and he told me he needed me to get an APD-27, which is a Geiger counter for surface reading. And he said, I need you to walk towards the craft and call back in the readings. And I got out and I looked where the craft was, and the craft was like, it's like the heel of a shoe, that's the best way I can put it.
And it sure wasn't a plane, was it?
And no, sir. And I started to walk toward the craft. And as I started to walk toward it, I was calling back the readings if it fluctuated, went up.
How big was it, Clifford?
I would say if you'd make it a full circle, it was 30, 35 foot in diameter.
Okay, but looking like a heel of a shoe.
Yes, sir.
So almost as if part of it was kind of straightened out a little bit, squared off, so to speak.
So when I got all the way up to it, I could look down. And what we call in a typical gray, 3.5 to 4 foot tall, one of the bodies was lying outside of the craft. There was a kidney shape open on the side, what, like, for lack of a better term, I'd call a canopy.
Okay.
And I called for an officer, and they just told me, we need you to go ahead and just tell us what you're seeing. And I kept telling them, no, sir, you don't understand. I need an officer up here.
They didn't want to go up there, did they?
No. So finally, the I always called him the colonel. He said, okay, son, come on back. You've told us enough. Then he put me back in the deuce and a half, and the canopy was pulled down, and he said, now you're going to be a good sport about this and look out the canopy, right?
Well, and Clifford, let me ask you, did the craft look like it was crashed, or did it look like it landed?
Oh, it was embedded into the ground.
Deep in the ground, okay.
It came in, made a skid mark, and like it started to go back up and just nose first at maybe a 30, 40 degree angle and impacted with the ground.
This occupant that you saw under the canopy, this gray, did it look like it somehow fell out of the craft, or might it have walked out and
right,
then maybe...
Right, it was injured trying to get out. It was half in, half out.
Okay, okay.
But I understand that there were three entities in this craft.
One out, two in?
Yes, sir, because I only saw the one.
Okay.
But the... I don't remember seeing any damage to the craft. I mean...
Other than it was embedded into the ground.
Other than it was embedded into the ground, I didn't see any damage. And, of course, there was that, you know, mound of earth around it, which covered the canopy to where they couldn't see it until you're right up on it and have to look down.
And tell us, Sergeant, at this point, this seems to be a very emotional episode for you. I can tell in your voice that this has had a profound effect on you. And I'm sure we're going to get into some other issues and cases during the day and tonight that you had even more. But am I right? Am I picking that up off you?
This is why people don't talk about it. People want to live a normal life. When I was at the Disclosure Project, and I went ahead and I told about the one that I helped escape.
Right.
And when I was telling that, there was a person, I don't have a right, and several people know the person's name, but I'd even tell them not to give the person's name. That person has to state. But that person was involved in a UFO incident. And everybody was afraid. And this person said he was afraid, too. But he said, I want to know, how did they talk? And I told him, I said, you know, it's like you hear a voice inside of your head. It's hard to explain. Yet, you know, before you utter a word, they know what your response is. And they will speak in any language that you have.
Were you picking up any Geiger readings?
What was that, sir?
Were you picking up any readings on the
Geigers? Appreciable above background radiation.
Okay, nothing that could
nothing
hurt you.
Nothing major, but I think I understand that now, too.
Okay.
And that when we talk about advanced concepts, we'll get into a little of that.
Mm-hmm. So you leave the scene. What happens next?
When we left the scene there, when I got back there, they went ahead, they had what we call a low boy come in, and they put it on the back of the low boy, and they covered it up with a tarp. And I'm not sure how they removed the bodies, because I wasn't there. I couldn't see that.
But they took the craft away.
And then I was asked, what did I feel? And I thought, what do you mean? Well, I was afraid. You got it? I was afraid. But, you know.
I don't blame you.
They said, no. Think. What was going through your head? And I said, what the heck do you think was going through my head? And they said, no, you've had experiences like this before. And right off the bat, I guess I got this shocked look on my face.
We're going to talk a little bit more about this incredible discovery by Sergeant Clifford Stone, and he has been part of the Disclosure Project. I'll be back. Hey, sign up for the free Coast Zone newsletter. All you have to do is go to coasttocoastam.com. There is a link there on the homepage, and you get a new free newsletter sent to your computer. It's an e-newsletter. Also, Clifford Stone, our special guest tonight, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You might want to go up to the website, take a look at some of the photographs he has sent us already. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with former Army Sergeant Clifford Stone. Clifford, so you go out there, you witness this embedded craft in the ground. There's a some kind of an ET under a canopy. Is it dead or alive at that point?
I'm pretty certain it was dead at that point.
Okay. And then, you know, they say, all right, you've had enough, Clifford. You move on. So you leave the scene. What happens next?
Well, like I say, I was put back in the back of my deuce and a half. And if you've ever seen a deuce and a half, they got that canopy over it.
Yeah.
And it's just totally enclosed. And they told me to stay back there and not to look out. And it wasn't until the next day when the sun had come up that this guy that I called the colonel, he came and got me. And then he started to question me, what did I feel? What did I feel? And I'm sitting back, what do you mean? I was afraid. And
you must have been shaking in your boots, literally.
Well, it wasn't the first time I had encounters. As a kid, I had encounters, which is why I believe I actually got in the military. The one thing they wanted me to do was what they call interfacing, and that's where you communicated with them. But see, they can't train that in the school. That is something you're selected.
You have to. All right, now, but was this your first military experience?
This was the first military experience with that type of situation. Before I'd ever go overseas, I would have two other incidences right there in the Virginia area.
Which was the one where you, and this is where you really had this notoriety, you helped an ET escape? Was it one of these other cases?
Yes, sir, and I don't know whether there was a crash or what, but this one, he didn't want to hurt anybody. And I'm going to try to go real fast on this.
All right.
But
we'll go with you, stride by stride.
They went ahead and they told me, we need you to talk to this person. He's our guest. So, you know, you have that natural inborn fear. No matter how many times you've had these experiences, you still have, because no two are alike.
True. And you kind of had a gut feeling you were going to meet something that was not of this world?
Oh, I knew.
Okay.
I knew it was going to be that way.
All right.
Anyhow, once again, they took me to this one-level building, and you'd think it was abandoned. It had a fence around what we call a storm fence with three strands of barbed wire over the top.
Sure, I've seen that.
So went through two checkpoints through the walkthrough gate. Once you come through the gate, then you go to the one going into the door. You have a little hallway there, maybe 4 foot in length, and you got a MP there that checks you. Then we went into the building, and there's a hallway there with rooms off to the left and right. So we went down the hallway. I think we turned to our right, and like on our third room, we turned to our left, and we went in there. And as soon as we went in there, there was one of the ETs sitting there, and he looked up at me. Well, you don't only pick up on what they're saying, but you feel it. So right off the bat, he said, I am afraid. I am far from home. And I felt the same fear.
What did he look like, Clifford? Was he one of the typical grays?
He was a very, like, chalkish, whitish gray. The eyes, they were black, but they were like cat eyes.
Big?
Big. And I'm going to say small slits for the nose and real thin mouth. But I'm trying to remember events that happened 40 years ago.
I understand. But they seem etched in your brain, Clifford. They just don't go away.
You have nightmares about them, sir.
I can understand that.
Anyhow, he told me he wanted me to help him, and I said, I will. But no one else could hear what we were saying.
This is telepathy, basically.
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, Clifford.
you have a tendency, you want to speak. But, you know, the visitor already knows what you're going to say. And in this case, I couldn't speak. We had to really do everything that way.
It somehow knew that you would protect it.
Yes, sir. At this point, I went ahead and I said, he's got something he's got to show me, but it will not happen while everybody's here. And it could be sort of dangerous. And there was disagreement first about leaving me. They'd take their chances. And I said, it won't happen. And this will be good for mankind. So the colonel went ahead, told me, you won't stab me in the back. And I said, no, sir, I wouldn't dream of that. So they got everyone out. I had one person that was a close friend there that had no idea and didn't want to know what was going on because he knew I was involved in something. And I told him to cut a hole in the fence with some wire cutters, and I said, then you leave. So he did that. So as soon as everybody was out, we ran towards the fence, and there were some shots fired in the air. I thought they were shooting at us. I thought, you know, today I'm going to die.
And the little ET's running away with you?
He ran with me.
Are they fast?
They're fast.
Okay.
And he kept checking on me because he was ahead of me. So I pulled it open while he got out, and immediately a craft showed up. And there was like this bright beam of light. It just shined down on him. And he said, we'll meet again. I don't know if we ever have, but that was the last I saw of him.
And what happened to you, Clifford, once you obviously went back?
And of course, I was in for a royal chewing out. And I said, you said they were that he was a guest. We were treating him like a prisoner. And I said, they don't have rights. I don't know why I said that. But the colonel caught on to that real quick. And he said, no, they don't. They're not a member of the human race. I said, no, they're not a member of the human race on this planet.
Clifford, let me ask you this. I mean, you helped this ET escape. A craft comes down. His own kind picks him up and off he goes. Why didn't they retaliate? They could have destroyed the base. They could have destroyed the building. They could have wiped all of you out except you, let's say. Is there something about them that just keeps them from being evil, keeps them from retaliating?
We know that not all contact will be of a friendly nature.
True, and we're going to get into some
of that. Most of it will be. With technology, you have to grow spiritually with your technology. Or ultimately, your technology will destroy you. This has happened to other civilizations out there. They know this. Civilizations that were on the brink of becoming interstellar space travelers, meaning traveling from one solar system to the next, traveling from one galaxy to the next, using things, technology, mind you, that we would think of as magic. But if we cannot grow spiritually where we start caring about one another and really caring what happens to the other guy, we ultimately will destroy ourselves.
Well said. Have we been dissecting these alien craft that we've picked up, the crashed craft? Have we been taking it apart, back engineering these things?
We have been taking it apart, trying to back engineer it. We actually test flew one back in 86, 87 time frame. It crashed. We used the cover story that it was a stealth aircraft that crashed. It was not a stealth aircraft that crashed.
Where do they keep them? Area 51? Other places?
If I tried to tell you that, I'd be lying because I really didn't have a need to know. Therefore, I never knew.
That part you don't know. Okay.
There are several places. I'm going to tell you right up front, don't negate Edwards Air Force Base.
Okay. How many people within government are aware of all this, what's been going on? what is going on? How many are aware of it?
I think that there's quite a few people who really know, but at the same time, if they talk, they look like me, like you're crazy, because you can't prove anything.
Is that one of the reasons why they just let you say what you say without trying to stop you?
Well, they can't stop me. They almost court-martialed me once, and that's why I was assigned here in the military here at Roswell.
But that was a long time ago.
That was back in 86, 87, 88 time frame. And they would have to tie it to the involvement into UFOs.
So they figured it's just safer to let you just spout, right? Just let
Only
you
yes,
say.
Sir.
Okay.
But they didn't really want me to get out.
Why are they keeping this a great secret? We've got governments in Britain, France, Denmark, all of them releasing UFO reports. Why not this country?
Okay, we are releasing reports. It's just that people don't know where to find them and to read them. That's the whole purpose of me trying to get FOIA documents. There's some very fascinating cases in Blue Book. The Bismarck, North Dakota, is it 1953? Beautiful case. Hynek, even at that time, went and stated, this doesn't make sense. Here we had an area of 500-600 miles where a UFO was seen, and they believed it was the same UFO. They sent fighters up to try to intercept it that couldn't do it. But in that span of 3-4 hours that all these observations was being made, no photographs were made. No photographs of the radar screens were made.
Jeez.
No telemetry was taken. All the scientific data that would have been useful. But Hynek himself in later years came out and said that there was no cover-up in Blue Book, because Blue Book really didn't have the authority or the power or the rank to mandate and direct the Pentagon or anyone above the rank of major at that time to take any action. A captain cannot order a major and above to do anything. And in some cases, there's one incident in particular where he asked a scientist about a case, and the scientist told Hynek, I've been told to tell you to drop that issue. Now, he was told to drop it because Hynek really didn't have a need to know. As a scientist, Hynek, he took exception to that.
It could have been one of the reasons he switched and changed his views, or at least publicly changed
them. He had already switched them, but he did not rock the boat, so to speak.
Right.
He told the party line because he knew, even no matter how poor the records were, the database was the Blue Book files, and he had access to them. If he said, look, there's something to this, why are you guys taking it more serious? Well, the reason they wasn't taking it more serious, they already knew, hey, some UFOs are interplanetary, and they're here. What's more, we're getting bits and pieces of their technology, and we need to figure out how to put that technology, integrate it into our technology, and make it part of our own culture.
Cliff, was Blue Book the smokescreen? Was that the public perception issue? Let's float Project Blue Book. Let's let people think we've done a little investigating. Let's put someone in like Dr. J. Allen Hynek, and the real stuff we're going to hide.
Behind the scenes, somebody else was taking care of the actual really good UFO events and reports. Blue Book was to go ahead and massage the public curiosity and interest.
And let them think we're doing something, right?
Correct. They were the PR for the Air Force. But even they had to go ahead before they could say anything. They had to contact the public information officer at the Pentagon, who would then go ahead, check with military intelligence or air intelligence as to what the appropriate, what would be appropriate to say. Another good case is the Mantell case. January 7th, 1948, Captain Thomas F. Mantell was killed while chasing a UFO. It could not have possibly have been Venus at the time of the sighting.
And do we know if his death was accidental, chasing the UFO, or whether there was some kind of intervention by the UFO to harm him?
His death was accidental, but it was because Mantell was a very brave man. He saw something that the Air Force said didn't exist. He knew now they existed because he was seeing it. He took a calculated risk. He knew going a pass 17,000 feet was risking his life. He took that gamble to try to get a closer look at whatever craft this was. He knew when he came back, he would be interrogated as to what did it look like, what was its features. He knew all of that. So he gambled his life to try to get a closer look at that craft. Unfortunately for him, he did go ahead, pass out due to lack of oxygen, and crash.
Oh, my.
But it's because, in my book, he was a hero. But it should have never happened because Army CIC should have had something put out to the Air Force in some subtle way. The Air Force should have said, look, some of these things are real. Don't take unnecessary chances. Now, the Russians do to this day. They have standing orders to try to shoot down UFOs. The Red Chinese to this day have orders to engage UFOs. That is not a good idea.
No, and to your knowledge, has any government shot down a UFO?
To the best of my knowledge, we have never shot down a UFO. They are their most vulnerable when they're having technical problems with their technology. And they are as mortal as us. Therefore, their technology is fallible.
Does something on this planet interfere with their technology, causing them to go down?
The Roswell crash.
Right. What about it?
Okay. The Navy was hitting up and testing a high-proclamation, high-resolution radar. That interfered with their guidance system.
During a lightning storm, I guess.
Yes, sir. And actually, they found out a little about Doppler by using that in storms. But while they were using it, it interfered with their guidance system, which caused it to crash. Radar's still on, so when they made the first initial landing, then took back up, thinking they were going to make it this time, they had more difficulty causing them to crash at that point.
Sergeant, you devoted now your life to all this. How come?
Because, sir, for most of my life, it took my life. And over the course of it taking my life, I saw a whole lot of people get hurt. I've seen people go ahead, lose their families. I saw people take guns to their heads, blow their brains out. Jeez. I know of cases where that has happened to other people. And, you know, I know of it happening in the military. I know of it happening to the average man on the street, even some police officers, simply because they had seen a UFO or an event of high strangeness, and we can't tell them the truth.
You have changed your views on the interstellar technologies. We'll talk about that in a moment.